Let's go. Welcome to another Cooligans Daily Live.
We're live every day.
We're live every day. Yeah.
If the World Cup's happening, you know, technically at this point, we're athletes.
Technically, we're logging in more minutes than some of these players.
That's a damn sure. Looking at you, Roldan. I got more miles covered.
Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
We here every day, noon Eastern, with you. Excited. I mean, this World Cup weekend has been crazy. The last few days, we just got back from Kansas City.
How was your Father's Day?
My Father's Day was lovely.
Yeah.
Hung out with the family as a father.
You don't get a break on Father's Day? That's not your day to not be a dad?
That's not how Father's Day
works.
That's
what I would want. I'm not a dad, but if I was a dad, I'd be like, this is the day nobody scream, nobody cry. I'm not changing any diapers, not even my own. You know what I mean?
That is the day you get put on a pedestal and your wife tells you, go clean the gutters.
Yeah.
You know, go do some housework.
Okay. Yeah. That, apparently every day's Father's Day in my house.
No, but happy Father's Day to everyone. But man.
Hey, shouts to all the dads, huh? I wish I would have had one.
You know what? They don't get enough love, to be honest. Okay. This is, what about international men's? Anyway.
All right, Agudelo. All right. Here's a throwback.
Let's get started today because it is time for our six pack of reactions presented by Smirnoff Ice, the official ice cold beverage that should absolutely be in your fridge for every match this summer. Smirnoff Ice, too crisp to resist. Okay, Alexis, you're gonna kick us off.
Yeah, baby. Look, when I'm thinking about my six pack of reactions and what it really means, I think the only thing that needs to be said, Mauricio Pochettino has changed soccer in this country forever.
Mm, okay.
That is it. There is something going on. When you and I started this podcast in 2015, what we had hoped the landscape of soccer in this country would look like, minus one or two things, right? Promotional relegation. We're starting to get now. We have a fully engaged, sort of fan base. People are giving us plaudits for how well our team plays. The United States of America, it just used to be heart and soul. Now, we not only know how to play, tactics need to be adjusted for us. The team knows how to suffer. The team knows how to go through stints where they're not playing their best. They know how to survive that and get back to how they're playing well in the same game. Our own players are making in-game adjustments themselves. We have tactics where people are saying things like they play like a club team. This team could go far in the tournament. This has never happened before. A lot of it is because of the decisions that were made by U.S. Soccer, in particular, hiring Matt Crocker, who brought in a friend of his, in Mauricio Pochettino, and how well and serious he's taken this job has proven to be an absolute game changer for this country. The sport will never be the same. People are cheering at the right moments during games. People understand. The fan base is starting to turn a corner from, you know, what it was before, which was soccer sickos and families. It's now becoming a fully embedded. I'm seeing nothing. Maybe it's just my algorithm, but reel after reel after reel of people saying like, hey, I never watched this sport before, but I'm involved. There's that tweet that's gone viral of a guy saying, hey, my kids are baseball fans and they've never once even thought about soccer. And this entire time since that first game, they've been out in the backyard with a soccer ball at their feet, pretending to be Phil Aaron Balogun. Mm-hmm. Everything has changed. The bump has already started from the World Cup, and all of it is thanks due to Mauricio Pochettino.
Wow, okay. I mean, they've just two games. I'm not going to get
ahead of myself. How much has already changed in two
games? I'm not going to get ahead of myself. No, this is
Mauricio Pochettino is our daddy, and it's Father's Day.
This is the platform. This is the time to be playing good soccer, football. Mm-hmm. And just like the 94 World Cup was an inspiration to a lot of people, you expect the same. I'm not going to necessarily say that's all due to Pochettino, but I think the you have to give credit to these two performances.
If the team was playing badly, do you think we'd be having this positive effect around the country? And
no, not at all. Not at all.
That's why I'm giving it to Mauricio Pochettino, because if the team was playing badly, I don't think this would happen. No offense. I think Greg Berhalter did a great job getting us to this point. I've said that before. I'll continue to say that.
Yeah.
But if he was still the manager, I don't think, we would have this. We wouldn't be playing this way. We wouldn't be having these vibes. And we wouldn't be having this overall sentiment.
Sure. I mean, it's all speculative. I mean, we are where we are now. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to not give credit to Pochettino. But
sounds like you're poo-pooing it a little bit.
I'm just saying, but I was also critical in the friendlies leading up to this tournament. So I don't want to just forget all the things I was thinking before.
I wasn't.
Yes, you were.
No.
You were not.
Remember, I said it was, hey, this is a time to try it out. Remember, I said like a couple going away on vacation.
So obviously not
stuff in a hotel room you wouldn't.
But no, what Pochettino has done is now raise the, not necessarily just raise the standard, but raise the expectation, because it was like we were sort of just excited to kind of get out of the group. And now it's like with how they are playing, it's mm-hmm. like, quarterfinal might not be enough. That's
think about that. Quarterfinal,
which is,
it would be a disappointment,
right? So with that,
thank you, Mauricio.
With that said, I'll give some credit to Pochettino there, because he has people hoping. My first reaction out of these six is the head-to-head tiebreaker rule. I think we're realizing right now it is just a terrible move, terrible mistake on FIFA to change the rule. So they basically went from goal differential being the first tiebreaker in a group to now just head-to-head matchups being the first tiebreaker. And we're in the moment now where Mexico is playing in a game. They already won the group after two games. This third game does not matter. U.S. won their two games. This third game does not matter. So even Turkey losing, like, it gives no hope for them to possibly they're out of the tournament like that. So just on both sides, there's no possible scenario where they could score 8 goals in a game and move on and stuff like that. Remove that is kind of a bummer.
Can I tell you why I think it's a positive they did this?
I mean, it's your show too.
All right. Here's the thing, right? Everyone's complaining about calendar congestion for players and how many minutes these starters are playing, right? So if you're a big player on a national team, odds are you're a big player at your club team. Odds are if you're a big player in your club team, you're probably playing in a lot of competitions in your domestic league. So your calendar is full. Like Declan Rice is a good example. You've played a lot of games already. Now that means if you do well in the first two, you can rest a lot of your starters in that third game. So it almost negates the adding additional matches, an additional round. It almost levels that out as far as how many games are being played by your biggest stars. Because now Mexico and the U.S. can, I'm not saying they will, but they can essentially rest all their most important players for this third game, since it's fairly meaningless. And it also gives your bench players, your players that were on the squad, probably not going to get a shout, now they get a chance to play. So I get what you're saying, because it makes it less competitive.
And my counter argument,
for the player, it's better.
I
know you don't care about people, okay?
Right, that's going to be my first.
Listen, children, make my iPhone and be quiet.
In general, in most situations that aren't the World Cup, I would agree with you. But we know how much people pay for these tickets, how excited they got a third game in a group stage. Like, oh, maybe this might be an exciting game, fighting for a third place spot or some and now that's kind of just taken away from them. They spent a whole ton of money mm-hmm. and they're going to go see a fairly meaningless game, which that part of it, I understand. And like, get rid of the Carabao Cup. That's where I would say let's remove the fixture congestion, okay, as opposed to the World Cup.
Right, just real quick, in case Carabao executives are listening.
You know what I mean? Like,
we have an alcoholic beverage. We would love an energy drink on this show.
I'm just saying, man.
There goes our Carabao.
I want every game should have an incredible amount of meaning at the World Cup. And
put in the comments, because I get what you're saying. If you spend a lot of money on a third game, but I think like, yeah, you messed up. And not only can the bench players get moments, now if you ain't got a lot of money and you can't afford a big World Cup ticket, you still got to go to a World Cup game because you can afford the third game.
Okay.
And make these $5 tickets.
I would love the game to be exciting, too.
You know what?
Anyway, okay.
Put these in D.C. because they didn't get any games. All right. Expanded World Cup was a good idea. That's my hot take.
Mm.
Everyone's talking about this expanded. It's watering it down. Oh, yeah? Ask anyone who's played Cape Verde. Ask anyone who's played Curacao or recently played Curacao. This has been incredible. The vibes are great. The fans are amazing. More people get to experience the World Cup. This is what the World Cup means. And I'm sick and tired of major European nations and the fans of those nations saying like, oh, well, it's watering it down. It's not just for you. This is a World Cup. We're looking at this here. It's the most, it's almost upsetting how right Infantino was about a 48-team tournament, says Frank Leonard. Shouts to Frank Leonard.
Frank the homie.
It's this is expanding, and this lets me believe more nations should take part. These matches will change Cape Verde forever. People that play in other nations that have Cape Verdean heritage will now consider themselves like, hey, maybe I should play for that. This will inspire children of all of these nations to want to play. This is what we want. I've been saying it from the beginning, and people were cooking me in all the comments. This is good for the smaller nations. Stop thinking about just yourself. Just because you've been playing soccer for 100 years doesn't mean you're the only one who gets to go to the World Cup.
Okay. I mean, I can't really disagree much. I think 48 is fine. I don't know how many okay, more we
pull
need.
Pull up the ladder, Polanco.
I don't know how many more.
We have enough.
How many more we need? I mean, it's not about teams qualifying or not qualifying. It's just the amount of games in a day, right? Like, how long should the World Cup go? You add more countries, you add more games. Is it a 2-month World Cup? You just went on a whole spiel about fixture congestion. You know how many games are going to be played? You're going to be additional games, and then for fans, watch. How are you going to watch all the game? You get so many. It's impossible. We all going to have to be putting cubes in Times Square to watch all these.
Not a bad idea. My wife's about done with me the last week. She's like, "You're just going to sit on the couch and that's it. You need to watch Iraq versus." PG at midnight? All right.
You know, every couple is just on sabbatical
100%
for a while. So, look, there's obviously pros and cons to it, but I understand. All right, let's move on. I'm going to go. My second Smirnoff take is players. I saw this from William Saliba, but players are complaining about the quality of the pitches. I saw William Saliba specifically talk about the field at New York, New Jersey Stadium. That is, to me, just absurd that this is even a thing that the players that it's not up to the quality of what these players are used to. It's the work. This is the time. You can't say you don't have money. You can't say there's not enough investment. Like this should be pristine. This should be flawless. And instead of players saying that the ball is bouncing weird and having these, we saw it at the Club World Cup. You know, so that's even another ridiculous aspect of it is that they tested this whole thing.
Yeah, we had a practice run.
And for it not to be absolutely flawless. I know that the pitches were grown in New Jersey and everything. And I know that people are doing a lot to make sure that it is as good as possible. But to hear this from players is so disappointing.
Especially where that's going to be the final.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be the case, at least for the final. But I will say, the stadiums have been pretty great. Everyone loves the stadium atmosphere and sure. The concessions and all that. So at least that's good. We got to get the pitch is the most important part. That's got to be right up to par. For me, my last one is, look, hydration breaks are absolutely needed. It's very hot in this country, throughout the entire country, especially during these games. I don't know why they're playing games at noon in the summer in America. It's extremely hot here. And people in Europe can't even understand how humid and hot it gets here and how cold it gets here. We have way more extreme weather than you guys get in Europe. That said, not every game needs a hydration break. And the fact that it was used specifically to get commercials in makes me really upset. It furthers the narrative of why sporting events, specifically soccer or football events, shouldn't be held in America. This makes us look bad. This makes it look like we Americanified the sport. And it has nothing to do with us. It has everything to do with FIFA and maybe the broadcaster. Maybe there was some type of functioning together there. But as far as I'm concerned, it's not us. It wasn't our fault. We don't like it either. And I want the world to know that. And that's why a lot of us are watching it on Telemundo, just because at the very least you still get to see. I think it's important to see the reaction on the coach's face and the players and the body language. I think it leads to more understanding. And also, I really prefer the game to be a bit more fluid. I said before that I was believing that these drinks breaks, as they're being called in Europe, were being used as tactical to their tactical advantage. And we're seeing shifts in momentum. And now there's more than enough proof that that's what's happening. It's a little upsetting.
My only counter there is, like, I mean, obviously I'm not a huge fan of hydration break. I'm not a huge fan of it because it does stop the momentum of a game. Like, a team could be putting a ton of pressure on a team and maybe could possibly score. And you know, you just, if you two or three more,
it's helped smaller countries
runs. Right. Yeah. And that break could just get everybody like resettled and stuff like that. So, I think rhythm is a huge part of the sport that is we're seeing kind of get disrupted a little bit, and it's like it's just a lot more obvious. But then the one thing I know is like that this, for FIFA's sake, like this is a relatively successful venture in changing the way the game is kind of played. If the World Cup was in Antarctica, they're still doing hydration breaks, right?
Yeah,
they're like, no, we like...
Isn't the next one? The next one's in Europe, Spain. And,
and
Morocco, get ready for hydration breaks.
So that's kind of been the only thing. It's just like the disruption of the game. It's just like just a little bit disappointing. But it has its positive too, because sometimes the game changes and, you know, the team that we thought was going to get dominated, they figure something out, they change something. I'm gonna wrap up with this because this is actually... I think
why are you doing this
really interesting.
Off.
Yeah. Also, I want to make sure. Shout out to Smirnoff because they sent us custom kits, bro. Custom Cooligans Smirnoff kits, looking clean.
I'm wearing mine on Wednesday. You think I won't be wearing this all summer?
Okay. So thank you. All right. I just want to mention this. Jeremy Doku, the Belgian winger, he is in the news a lot because
he's not loyal to his country.
his partner, she is they're about to have their first child, and he is planning on being there for the birth of his first child. There was a journalist from L'Equipe that called the possibility of him leaving the Belgian team, for... it would be during possibly one of the knockout rounds, depending on how far they get. And he has said that he has spoken to the Federation. He's like, we'll do whatever possible, but he plans to be there for the birth of his child. And this journalist called it disgusting that he would leave the team. And to use a word like that to talk about the birth of somebody's first child because of a soccer game, and they don't want them to miss the soccer game, is... I mean, that is truly what is disgusting. I mean, and I understand it. It's their first child. Like my son was born a little over 3 years ago, and being there for that. I mean, the idea of missing that and after having experienced it it would be not only heartbreaking, just unbelievably heart shattering. The idea to suggest that Doku is the bad person for wanting to be there for the birth of his first child. And I like that the players have shown a complete solidarity with Jeremy Doku, but just realistically, shame on this journalist who got suspended, by the way, for saying this by L'Equipe.
It still made print. it's kind of crazy.
It is wild. There's no editorial board. I mean,
no one's like, hey, maybe we should change this word. Disgusting is too strong. I can understand players being like, whatever, this game is too important for me. I'll get to meet the child afterwards. I can understand that as well. Like, hey, if you don't have that emotional attachment that you have to that moment, fine. But at the same point, the other 50% of that is, if you want to miss it because of this, go for it. I wonder what happens, though, if it's the final.
I don't know.
Belgium is in the final, and that's when... She's cresting. What do they call it? Her water breaks. She's crowning. What do you do?
It's his decision and his decision alone. Whatever decision he makes, it can't be. You can't call it disgusting.
But what would you do if you were playing and it was the final and you were the most important player on the team? What would you do?
I mean, is he the most important player on the team?
Pretty much.
I mean, I'm there for my child. I mean,
a final.
Even a final.
And what happens if you
there's
lose
no
the final?
Way your lady understands. There's no way she's going to be forgiving, bro. You want to have a good rest of your life?
I think you got to discontinue with the lady thinks at that moment. But if it's a final, put it in the comments. What would you do if it was a World Cup final? You're the top three most important player on the team, probably the most important player on the team. And now your wife calls you and says, or your partner calls you and says, my water just broke. You'd be like, you better get a couple ShamWows.
Okay. All right. So, let's take a look at some comments. A couple people have been in the chat on YouTube.
Roll down, catching strays in the first 30 seconds. I'm sorry. I also wish he would have played in Seattle, by the way.
Okay. What else we got? USMNT are heading to having the easiest knockout round pathway we ever had, and this is the moment to capitalize. Thank you, Greg.
I agree, but also, is that Greg Berhalter?
No.
Also, stop saying that, please. We need this to actually happen. Everyone, sure, positive vibes.
We got to see after these third games.
Paying $8,000 for two seats to watch Mark McKenzie push your rolls down to eat 90 minutes in a meaningless World
Cup. That's what I'm saying, man.
But that's your fault for picking that game, though. You should have known that was going to be a
no, that's not what you should have known anything.
Third game, you wouldn't catch me.
Okay. What else we got?
Hydration breaks have killed some momentum for teams. I don't like it.
It's true. I get it. I mean, look, it kills momentum for some teams that should beat Cape Verde or should beat Curacao.
There's another 11 guys going, thank God we killed the momentum.
Okay.
Those guys were on our ass. I think hydration breaks will be forced to go away in the semis when they are all in covered stadiums. The fire and discontent is growing on the hydration breaks. The New York, New Jersey Stadium is the final, and that's not covered.
It is not covered. I mean, it is also funny in the Telemundo broadcast, whenever they do have the hydration breaks, they highlight, like, we're not going anywhere, folks.
Yeah.
Not like some other networks.
We're not problematic.
All right. Counterpoint, FIFA making money.
That is a very strong counterpoint.
Yeah. They're huge fans of that counterpoint. It's a strong argument that they make.
And they are making it.
Okay.
Share some with us, bro.
All right. So shout out to Smirnoff and the six pack of reactions. But boy, yeah, this has been a dramatic and a lot of controversy already in more than just simply the matches.
It wouldn't be soccer if it wasn't also a novela. So
exactly. That's why we love it. All right.
We got more when we come back right after this.
Honestly, he's a menace in the best of ways.
Bruno Fernandes!
Watching a player like Bruno makes you fall in love with your club.
There is ice in those veins!
The Premier League is full of unbelievable players, but there's one guy who walked into the hardest job in football and made it look like he's been waiting for it his entire life. The Portuguese Magnifico, Bruno Fernandes. And if you don't know what the name means at Old Trafford, well, that's exactly why we're here. I've been watching him since he signed for United in January of 2020. And from literally his first game, I kept thinking, this guy belongs.
Is this his moment with a Manchester United badge on his
chest? He walked in and immediately started demanding more from the players who had been there for years. On day one, at Manchester United, he never stops. He's scanning, pointing, telling his teammates where to go before they've even thought about
it. That is absolutely majestic.
And that outside of the boot pass, the Trivella, curving a ball around defender without even shifting his body weight.
Oh, Fernandes is the support. Pass.
Bruno. The goals are only half the story. He just broke David Beckham's record for the most assists in a single season for Manchester United, a record that stood for 26 years. And the all-time Premier League assists record, a record once held by Thierry Henry and Kevin De Bruyne, that's the company we're talking about.
He's a special player. He's a real
captain, the heartbeat of this club for six seasons straight. He's never once stepped on the pitch and given anything less than 100%. Not once. Every gesture, every demand, every pointed finger, Bruno leads loudly.
Outstanding finish. Bruno
and when you find out who he is off the pitch, the dream was always United. Always. Still chasing the dream at the club he's always loved. The hardest man on the pitch, every single time.
Bruno Fernandes, oh boy, that's beautiful.
Bruno Fernandes, seeing is believing.
Premier League did a tremendous job with these. Shouts to Sarah DeLuzio,
who's the homie.
Who's in that. We've had a couple homies be a part of that. And Bruno Fernandes, right? You can't take any of his plaudits away. He's an incredible player, incredible midfielder for Manchester United.
Should he have the assist record? I mean, probably not.
Try to help him out. Also, he's beaten the fact that he looks like, you know, even when he's smiling, he looks like he smells it far, but he wasn't sure if it was him or not. You know what I mean? He's like,
okay. Well, no, I mean,
kind of his face at all. Even when he's smiling, he's like,
I appreciate that's it. I appreciate that kind of analysis. I will say, you know, when I saw him last year play in person for the first time, I was unbelievably impressed. I mean, I'm like, during the Premier League summer series, I'm like, this is the best player on the pitch by far. And the fact that he gets criticized as much as he does is so literally insane to me. He's so good. But let's talk about Portugal, because they are playing tomorrow against Uzbekistan. They need a win here.
It's crazy that we're going to say, how do they beat Uzbekistan?
Right.
Because this is a team that a lot of people had as their front runner to win the World Cup. And I was against that the entire time. And that's mainly because of one person that Bruno Fernandes is forced to pass to, regardless of whether it's the right move or not. And that's the guy up front, Cristiano Ronaldo. And I get it. I've seen the comments. I've gotten a bunch of the DMs and I don't care. He is too slow. He is not. And Thierry Henry broke it down how he's being selfish and running into the position that other players should be in. And if he was making the moves that a number nine would be making, if he was a number nine and he was still able to make those moves and those runs, he wouldn't have gotten in the way and they would have a win under their belt for that first match. So now they're going up against Uzbekistan. And the real question becomes, do you start this man? My idea was that Roberto Martinez was going to start him, show the world, hey, he stinks. And then there's going to be a groundswell of, you know, sort of negative connotation towards him. And then you can replace him without it being Roberto Martinez's fault. Well, the time has come. You've shown the world, Roberto Martinez, make that decision. There's some conversation being had about Roberto Martinez possibly being the replacement for Mauricio Pochettino if he leaves, and the plan for him to leave after this World Cup is true. If he can't make this decision, he can't be the manager of the United States men's national team.
Okay. I just love the idea of Roberto Martinez being like, you see, he stinks. There's nothing I can do.
Show the world.
No, man, this is a... I think it's another one of those, like, on paper, Portugal should be dominating. Like, the draw against DR Congo, extremely disappointing from a Portugal perspective. And I think what is telling is, like, what happened after that game, which is, like, the comments from some of the players. I mean, all the Portuguese players are being asked about Ronaldo and I don't know if this quote is true, but I saw this on the timeline that I forgot which player, might have been John Neves, might have been Fernandez, somebody saying basically like, nobody's forcing me to pass the ball to Cristiano Ronaldo. But the fact that, whether that's true or not.
Right. There were like four or five floating red beans in his head when he said it.
But the fact that that has to be like addressed.
We can see it. We can see
something's
it.
Something's up, man. Yeah. It's just like the team should be. Should be better. And again, when the U.S. played Portugal and Cristiano Ronaldo wasn't a part of that team, they looked really good. That's the thing.
Because they are. when you have someone who's willing to track back and does the right job as a striker. And this has nothing to do with Cristiano's CV and his history and what he means to the sport and clearly what he means to a lot of the fans. This changes nothing. But at some point, you are too old and too slow and the game has passed you by to get on that pitch. And if you're upset and you're like, I never even got to the game. You know what I mean? I get it. I've been too fat, too slow, and too old to do any of this since I was eight, okay? But still, Cristiano Ronaldo was incredible at one point, and that time is gone. That time is past.
How are you eight and washed already, bro?
You should have seen. I played three games in jean shorts. I wasn't taking it serious, okay? All I'm trying to say is the time has come, and someone, maybe it's Bruno Fernandes, maybe you put those little goggles on and you could see better, and you could go up to him and say, hey, dog, it ain't, yo, you got to ride the bench, man.
Yeah.
Remember how good when they won the Euros, he was on the sideline coaching? Go do that, dog.
So
someone needs to Nancy Kerrigan him. So he's injured.
Okay. Well, and then he can't. Wait, let's not be using Nancy Kerrigan as a verb, dog. Let's not. We do not support that. No. So as far as a key player for Portugal to get this win against Uzbekistan, who are you expecting?
Gonçalo Ramos. Because you're going to have to replace Cristiano Ronaldo.
Okay, so yeah, bench.
And you're going to have to score.
So bench Ronaldo and just go with Gonçalo Ramos.
You have to.
Okay.
If Portugal even like slinks into the knockout rounds, it's going to be bad for everyone. Gonçalo Ramos is not the name on the top of your list for best strikers in the world. Gonçalo Ramos isn't the first name you think of if you said, hey, gun to your head and you got to get a penalty. Who do you bet? He's not any of those. You know what he is, though? He's better than Ronaldo at this age. Yeah. And that is case in point. He's going to make the right runs. He's going to do like basically what Jokic did on Arsenal. He's not going to light up the world, but he's going to make the right runs. He's going to do what was missing before, but they didn't have a player that could do it prior. That's exactly what he's going to do. And then Cristiano Ronaldo could come in the second half and get a couple garbage time goals and make himself feel better. Messi scored a hat trick and you couldn't even get one goal. You should be embarrassed. Go sit down on the bench. Well, go get your orange slice.
I mean, to Messi's credit, he is 1 year younger.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So, I mean, with that kind of youth, you understand why he would perform the way he does. I'm going to say my key player is going to be Cristiano Ronaldo.
This is ridiculous.
And not just for this game. I think it is going to, if he does have a good game, I think it will lift the spirits of the rest of the team and give the team some hope to see how far they could actually get in this tournament. There has to be, it's almost like either Cristiano Ronaldo has to make that decision to put in a good performance and get some of that negative, that negative attention away. Like, he's drawing too much negative attention to the team.
How many years ago did he play at Manchester United in that second stint?
He left, 4 years ago?
Okay. We were saying this about him at Manchester United.
Sure. Yeah.
What are we doing? Why are we still having this conversation?
Look, he's playing against Uzbekistan, where we saw how they played against Colombia. Colombia, it took a while for them to really break through.
They're defensively stout. But they make mistakes. They give up gaps.
The idea, even we're highlighting Bruno Fernandes and all the other and Vitinha and John Neves. Like, it's almost insane to me that they need Cristiano Ronaldo to be good.
They don't
with a team like
He's getting in the way of them being good. So I agree with you. So, if he does have a good game,
so that's the thing.
It changes everything.
And I think that will help them for the rest of the tournament. But
the likelihood he has a good game?
What's a good game? One goal is a good game, right?
Cristiano Ronaldo.
So I'm just saying, if he does get that like a monkey off his back, so to speak, I think it would be what would at least drown out the noise about his selection and being on the starting lineup and stuff like that, because I think it's becoming too distracting for the rest of the team. If he doesn't have a good game, then this is where I was. Roberto Martinez, put your big boy pants on. Yeah. Make the big decisions.
This is why you're hired, is to make these tough decisions.
And that's, it's even weirder for Roberto Martinez, who is not going to be the manager in a month. Just be like, yo, I'm out the door. I don't care if you like me or not.
If Luis Enrique could do it to Mbappe at PSG, you can do it to Portugal, bro.
So we need to instill the courage to Roberto Martinez.
Seriously.
If he does not have a good game, like, it's just not necessary to go through these distractions. Like, let the best Portugal team lose, if that is the case.
Yeah.
So, okay.
At some point, you gotta hang your hat on something. And if it's benching Ronaldo so the team can win, do it.
Let's
talk a little bit about England, because they've got an insane amount of firepower. We knew it when we saw the lineup come across, what their squad was going to be. And they're starting to put it together. They looked really good against Croatia. How far do you think England can go in this tournament?
So there's two questions. I'll first say, do we think they have the best attack at this tournament?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, do on paper, I feel like they might, but I don't feel like they put in the best.
They have one of the best.
Sure.
France still exists.
I think the Netherlands attack is also very good. We're seeing.
I trust England more than Netherlands on a game by game basis.
I mean,
to me, Netherlands has to put it together. England, you're good. You're playing great in club form. Harry Kane scoring buckets of goals in Bundesliga, winning a bunch of trophies. You know, you got Jude Bellingham and Madueke, obviously only there because Saka's still a little bit injured. Send him home, by the way. No need for him to be there. Declan Rice is playing incredibly well. Obviously, hasn't played to the level that he does at Arsenal. But you're looking at all these. These are all incredible players. Look at the bench. I mean, this is ridiculous. You know, most nations want them. But at the end of the day, France is still France. And they've done it in international tournaments year after year after year. And England needs to prove it. So are they the best attack? They have the potential to be, but I still place France just above them.
Yeah, same. Yeah. And then as far as, look, they're playing against Ghana, and what we think they can do in this tournament is going to be I don't think it's really in question to such a high degree. I mean, they are a strong team. They should handle Ghana. You know, any team at the World Cup is going to give people a lot of trouble. But again, that attack and that bench is just, we saw it in the game against Croatia. When the changes were made, the team was immediately improved. I mean, and not to suggest that the starting 11 are bad. It's just like, man, we busted our ass stopping these guys for 60, 70 minutes. And then Rashford comes on. And these other guys.
Yeah, no, it's impossible. But Tuchel, to his credit, is finding the right ways to use this talent. I think that's important. If you go back to England's of old, they were, you know, incredible lineup of players, you know, similar at the, in that era to what we see now, way more stacked now, but still very talented players, and they couldn't put it together, and that was because the coaching wasn't there. And now Thomas Tuchel got them going in incredible form, and he's figuring out the right tactics. You know, the ability to go over the midfield and position the players in the right spot and when to attack and when to hold, where they don't have to be defensively stout anymore. And, you know, absolutely impressive. Very impressive.
Yeah, it's weird given, like, this is England's second game, right? And, well, this is day 12 of the World Cup. And I'm like, they only play the second game now. Like, it just feels like there's been so many games. There's, like, five a day that it feels like we've seen England play 14 times.
More calendar congestion. So, I need to see you a little bit more.
So, no, I think it's interesting seeing... it's interesting seeing the pundits, the British pundits, like, and where they think sort of England can go. It's weird seeing, you know, Harry Maguire in New York selling Panini cards, which is a fun.
What an odd not World Cup.
Yeah, man, bro.
Should be on the squad, by the way.
I know, right? But, you know,
let's talk a little bit about Harry Kane, because as up front. You know, there was a lot of questions about him moving to Bundesliga. Mm-hmm. Is this the right move? And it's too easy of a league if you play for Bayern and so on and so forth. He goes there first year. He doesn't win a trophy. Everyone's saying, oh, my God, you know, the curse of Harry Kane. That's now been lifted. He's in incredible form. He basically drops back to where the defenders are to pick up the ball. He's a regista. He's a midfielder. He's the best pure nine right now playing. You know, he's almost everything for this team. He's a little too humble for my liking. I think if I were him, I would be a little bit more braggadocious. And I think that would lead more people to have maybe a little bit more confidence in you, or at least will you to want to be better. But this guy clearly is one of the best players in the game right now. And we're going to look back and say, we got to watch him play. Is he the player on this stacked England team that gets them to that over the hump? Gets them to that final, potentially bringing it home.
I didn't love his penalty against Croatia that he missed, but obviously it had to be retaken because the keeper was off the line. But he got another chance and buried it. I don't think there's much more you can ask of Harry Kane. I mean, I believe he missed his penalty in the Euros, if I remember correctly. But like, there's just. It's not
penalties. That's not their fault.
No, I'm saying it's not a skill thing. It's not a talent thing. You can't ask him to work on some part of his game.
Yeah,
he's good. Oh, he missed at the World Cup. Apologies. He made it at the Euros. But the there's not much you can ask him to improve on outside of some level of just psychological.
Well, what are we talking about here? I mean, he's scoring so many goals.
No, I'm just saying. But
I get it. You missed a couple important. But that's an England thing.
But it's an England thing. But it still requires some level of leadership to help the rest of the team. Like, if you're a leader, you're a veteran. Like, then you are asked to help others and not just do everything by yourself. So that is the only thing. Like, because you're making my point for me. You're like, oh, it's an England thing. Well, then. How are these English players going to help the team get over this is an England thing? How are you going to get over Chiellini being like, oh, it's England or it's Tottenham and it's Spursy and all this other stuff? Like
someone has to break that.
The curse, the Red Sox curse, the Babe Ruth curse. Yeah. Like somebody has to break that. And it took that Red Sox team, you know, being able to do that.
Why you bring up such a horrific thing?
So I'm saying, so that's kind of what the only thing I could probably possibly ask of a Harry Kane, because he does everything else right.
I think it would be, to me, it was a shame that he spent so many years at Tottenham, and not that it's Tottenham, but the team wasn't doing what it took to get a good enough team around him to win trophies.
Yeah.
A trophy, any trophy. And he moves to Bayern Munich. I said, this is exactly what he needs. He needs a change of pace. Look at how good some of these players are when they go play abroad. And I think that's what they simply needed, was to get away from England. You got to break out of that sort of toxic media landscape and all the pressure that gets put on these players. Go play somewhere where life's a little bit easier, life's a little bit more comfortable. They put seasoning in their food. And then, well, Germany. But and then you can come home and play on this national team and not feel the weight of that. And I think that's what we're seeing in Harry Kane.
Sure. And I would add, like, the, you know, obviously the level of Bundesliga is not the same. Yeah. But the performances, a 40-goal season in Bundesliga, it's probably like a 22, 23 goal season in the Premier League, and it's probably equivalent. But to the confidence of those extra you know,
you visualize the ball 18, going in the net.
Yeah, like times. 17 goals going in that you're seeing it go in the net. Yeah, you're like, I'm the greatest footballer that's ever walked the earth.
Yeah. And plus, you're not going against Premier League defenders throughout the whole World Cup.
Exactly. So maybe
you got one in Uzbekistan and Kuzunov.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So we'll see.
Look out for Shermadov. I know I'm completely mispronouncing his name, but the kid's a bucket.
Okay. Let's look at some comments. Shout out to everybody watching on YouTube, giving us some comments.
England and France have the deepest, most informed squad. Spain and Netherlands with a favorable draw. Norway, maybe. Japan, dark horse.
I like it.
Okay. You were saying that to your bookie, and you decided the voice, the text caught it all.
Tuchel, stop tukling, finally. Let that $2 billion stable run, clown. Okay, okay, Pete Morton.
I'm a little tuchelish. You know what I mean? Don't come at me.
Okay, don't touch me there.
Don't come at me.
Okay. Yeah, man. Okay.
I want to believe the U.S. can win this thing, but then I look at England, France, and Spain rosters. SMH, need a miracle.
You kind of do. I mean, even...
But
even,
you know what, though? So do they. When you get to that, anything can happen.
We remember the 2022 World Cup final. If Emi Martinez doesn't stop that Colton Mahoney shot, that is a miracle.
Literally a miracle.
That was insane. A 1v1 late in extra time.
The calf of God, I believe they called it.
I mean, you need some of those moments.
Also, can I say something? What a wonderful World Cup if we get to a place where we're put in a quarterfinal or a semifinal against an England, France, Spain, whatever. That's a great World Cup for the U.S.
100%. Okay, what else we got? Is that the last one? Maybe it's the last one. Okay, now we got more. P. Martin said, Tuchel may have finally realized that he is not half as smart as those players are at football. Okay.
Look, Tuchel needed a little bit of an ego check, and I think he got that.
Okay.
And now it seems like it's all playing out the way you expect. Yeah.
But the one thing
gets tough.
Yeah.
Start reverting back.
The one thing I found interesting, we just mentioned Harry Maguire. Harry Maguire said, and this is a comparison to Pochettino. Pochettino did not call the players that he left off the team. They sent an email, and people felt that was rude and disrespectful. I saw Harry Maguire talking about how he was notified that he didn't make the team. He got a FaceTime call from Tuchel, and he said it was one of the most uncomfortable conversations he's had in his life.
I would have rather an email.
He said
it. Maybe be angry.
And I don't know if it's if you want a German dude calling you to give you bad news, maybe it's the messenger.
The culture's too cold.
Not the message.
Yeah. No, we need warm shoulder. Okay. Not German. Ronaldo is so selfish that he could care less about what the team really needs, even if it means sitting out. Ingrid, I completely agree. Thank you for taking time out. I completely agree. I just think Ronaldo's just one of those guys that's like, I'm going to win the World Cup, not we're going to win the World Cup.
Maybe. It's all speculative. I don't know. I don't know. Okay.
That's speculative. We've seen him on
Ben Corrigan said, France have a better attack, player for player, but we have great depth. I'd love to know what conversation Rashford and Gordon have had given the latter's move to Barcelona. Yeah.
I would say Rashford and Barcola, if he is coming off the bench again, could be fairly comparable.
Rashford
is probably, because of his experience, a little bit better off, but that's a kind for kind exchange.
Okay. Sure. If you're comparing those two. I mean, I would say Barcola is like, has probably a little bit more pace, a little bit more, forward. I would say Barcola's maybe a little bit more similar to Gordon, like a little slightly slower Gordon, but I could kind of see it.
But for me, I mean, that's not that. I don't think the benches are really that much more powerful. The bench or the substitutes in England are that much more powerful than France.
Okay. I mean, I wonder the conversation between Rashford and Gordon.
Yeah.
Given that that's Rashford's spot.
Yeah.
And Barcelona being like, you know what, we're gonna pay twice for what a lot of people think is a not as good of a player.
You think Rashford's just like, look out for the huzz. All right. Okay. We got more cool because we get back after these commercials.
Yo, welcome back to the Cooligans Daily Live. Let's get into some match previews. There's a couple games About to kick off in a few minutes, actually. Yeah, come on.
You picked the perfect place to watch just before the games.
Argentina against Austria. Damn. And I think after that first game.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people in Argentina with Austrian heritage.
Huh? Okay. I mean, and we're not going to look into why.
I'm going to Google that.
But no, bunch of games going on. We're going to a game soon as well, which is exciting. We're going
to
be
going. The Game Time, by the way. Great place to get
tickets. Yeah, yeah. The official ticketing partner of Yahoo, but if using the Game Time app. But Argentina against Austria. We're looking at the expected 11, which we probably have the actual 11. It might be super close to this, but this is same expected as the last game. But Messi getting a hat trick. I think shuts out pretty much any doubt of who is going to win this group. The group is incredibly favorable to Argentina regardless.
Yeah, I think Austria can put up a good fight, though. They've got a lot of great players. I think the issue is a lot of the players this is the exact 11, by the way. So Taliafico looks like he's on the bench now and Medina comes in for him. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see. I'm surprised Julian Alvarez isn't starting or getting one of these games. I mean, Argentina, you already know what to expect, right? They're the title holders at the moment. They've got the World Cup trophy. Can they keep it going together? I think Austria is going to be a little bit of a fight for them because Austria is filled with players. You're like, wait, I thought that guy was German. You know, right. There's a lot of that going on here, especially when it comes to, you know, players that the way they play. And they've got that Ralf Rangnick.
Mm-hmm.
however you're supposed to pronounce it. He has them playing like a club team. So let's look at their 11 because I think it's absolutely incredible. I'm not sure if we have it, but I think one of those, like David Alaba from Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, from Real Madrid. Konrad Leimer from Bayern Munich is on the team. Schlager and Seibold from, I believe they're both on RB Leipzig, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Sabitzer. I mean, these are all names that you've heard of. Can they put it all together? Can they get it to the point where they can put it all together and score some goals? That's going to be the big one.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing here is for Austria, like this is, you know, most countries don't get to face Argentina. And it would be an incredible test to see where you are, comparatively to the rest of the world. Messi's hat trick against Algeria and Austria are two very different teams. I think on paper, you just kind of expect a stronger defensive performance. But then it's also, if the only guy that beat you was Messi, you generally kind of did okay, right? You just don't want him to do it three times.
Yeah,
you just had
that's a tough route.
He
to
just had just a out of this world game. But
we're about to see can they press? Can they press Argentina the way they like to press everyone else?
Yeah, and so look, I would imagine like Austria. Maybe set pieces. Maybe there's like where is kind of like the weakness? It's an interesting group in that they won 3-1 against against Jordan. So the desperation to win is not really there. This is like the game they probably expected that to kind of lose, but this still puts them in a good.
You're wrong. I think they're gonna score from the run of play.
Okay,
yeah. That's best. I'm pretty confident. I'm high on Australia.
Okay, we'll
get it out of my hands.
We'll find out within minutes. So we'll see how that goes. Okay.
They say they were going to win, but why don't we talk about France? Iraq, France again. Another team. You know what to expect. They're absolutely incredible. They looked absolutely insane in their first match. Can they continue to surprise and can they continue to impress? I see no reason not to. I mean, look at these names: Désiré Doué, Ousmane Dembélé, Olise having the year of his dreams so far. Kylian Mbappe, I mean, absolutely incredible. The one weakness here for me is, again, Teo Hernandez and Adrian Rabiot. I think those two players, for me, are just incredible, would start on most teams. On this France team, it's a bunch of Cadillacs and it's a bunch of Rolls Royces. Mm-hmm. You got two Honda Civics.
But you know what? Sometimes you need, the OG to shepherd all that.
Portugal right now are going, no, we don't. We don't.
So, I would be, I mean, it would be an unbelievable upset if Iraq could get a result here. France had a little bit of a slow start in their game against Senegal. But man,
that was Senegal. Senegal won AFCON. No disrespect. Iraq has been playing very well, but I mean, this is France.
Yeah. So I would love an upset here.
Norway torched them.
Sure. So any predictions here? I mean,
I would say 4-1.
You think they're going to score? Yeah. The Iraqs can score.
I think that was the part. You're going to be surprised.
I'll just say 4-0. Okay. Okay. Next up, Norway against Senegal.
This is what a juicy game, bro. This is everything I've said about Norway.
Alexis is salivating.
Oh my God, bro. Pavlovian. I think everything I've said about Norway, either I'm really right or really wrong based on how this game goes.
Okay.
Because Norway showed in the first match that they are absolutely on fire offensively. Defensively, not the best. Okay. They leak a little bit. You know what I mean? And not like your search history. Like, it's not a good league, you know? This is going to be tough, but can Sorloth, Erling Haaland, and Martin Odegaard, can they score enough to keep the attack of Senegal at bay, which they are going to get on the board? Senegal are absolutely stacked. It's a great team. So for me, this, the 11 you're looking at right now on the screen, that back line, a bunch of names I can't pronounce perfectly. They need to put it together, man. They need to figure out a way to become a little bit more stout, a little bit more together.
I think this game is actually more the storyline here, and the focus is probably more on Senegal because they're I think they're a federation and a team that is in disarray, and we're hearing a lot more stories about everything that they're dealing
with.
Players not getting paid. Yeah. The coach hasn't been paid in 6 months. They didn't receive their AFCON bonuses, which, you know, there's obviously a lot of controversy there. So I think,
dude, imagine Morocco pays the bonuses.
So I think that's going to be the big thing. But, you know, I mean, the players on there, I mean, obviously Mane still doing his thing. Sar, they have just ballers on this team that should be.
Yeah, the federation is really failing these players because they put their heart and soul out there.
Right.
Especially in AFCON, and they've been playing well in this. They've brought them up a level as far as what to expect from Senegal. So come on, Senegalese Federation.
Yeah, I'm going to say, look, I'm kind of rooting for Senegal here. I think they're going to. I think they get a result here. I think it could possibly be a draw.
See that happening.
This is a very different. I mean, Norway did what they did against Iraq and won 4-1, but this is a different team, and they're going to have their troubles, obviously, with Erling Haaland and Sorloth, and we saw the just extreme. Iraq could not handle the physicality of Norway. It was so obvious.
It's monsters walking around. Imagine if Wemby hit a gym. That's every player.
So we'll see. I'm going to go for Senegal getting a result here. I mean, if it might sound a little bit crazy. All right.
I think Norway's going to win this.
Let's wrap up with some comments. Shout out to everybody watching.
What y'all saying in these comments, bro?
YouTube.com/soccercooligans.
I compare Pochettino Tottenham to Tibbs Knicks. The owner won't spend money, but the limited squad gasses out at the end. Great for tournaments, though. Okay, I can see that.
Okay.
But that means that Roberto De Zerbi is their Mike Brown.
Okay, is that who we need next?
You think so?
Gordon is a Foden replacement, but full adult size. If that dude works on his crosses, phew. Okay, yeah, put your P more in.
Gordon is great, man. He didn't look incredible in the first game with England, but he's an incredible
player. I wouldn't use the word great, but okay.
You know who would? Barcelona front office.
Okay.
So you can't swap places. Don't jinx us.
You too, can't we?
Oh, so because we sit in these positions now, they're saying that's why the U.S. is winning.
Exactly. We did a. This is it. We're inverted wingers.
We're Freaky Friday, bro.
So, okay. Any others? Rabio is used to covering for Theo by now.
Someone's on the TMZ.
Someone knows ball. Okay.
Yeah,
I love it. So, okay. Anything else? We got any others?
Get back to the ladies. Maybe, too.
Okay.
Where the money going?
Who said that?
Which one?
Keyshawn, where the money go? What money?
Is it Senegal?
Is that what you're referring to?
Is it FIFA? Okay. Is it me and Christian? Because if so, start shredding all the documents right now. What are we talking about? Okay. Who are you? Who sent you?
This is for you, Alexis, from Bryce Jackson.
Okay. Alexis, the team is full of Rolls Royces and caddies. Me, Portugal, got a 1967 Ford Escort up top. Damn. Christian Ronaldo now being compared to a 1967 Ford Escort.
It was the Ford Escort.
I don't think they made it back then, but that's how embarrassing it is, bro.
Okay.
Damn.
All right, we got one more comment. Robbio. Oh, well, we got there this we one go. Already. Robbio is coming by now. Okay. Well, you know what? It's so nice we had to show it twice.
Yeah, baby. Right. Like New York.
Everybody, thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Again, we'll be back tomorrow, noon Eastern. Shout out to everybody tuning in live. You know, subscribe on YouTube if you have not yet. What was it? Who scored the most?
Who scores the most goals? Erling Haaland.
Mbappe. I'm going to go with Mbappe.
Ooh, okay, not a bad
playing
pick.
A better team. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Y'all the best. We'll see you tomorrow, noon Eastern. Cheers, everybody.
Love you guys.